Dr. Arnold G. Wilkins is Professor Emeritus at the University of Essex in the United Kingdom. He has spent an academic career studying the environmental causes of visual eye strain. He has proved through his research that the temporal modulation, which is a fancy tech term for flickering, of magnetically ballasted fluorescent lamps was causational, not correlated to negative human health outcomes. Well, guess what? Dr. Wilkins had some thoughts to share on our new solid-state LED lighting systems, which I think you will find interesting to say the least. I apologize, not the best audio quality. Dr. Wilkins was in Britain, and Greg was in Minneapolis, and I was in Toronto, but I still think it's worth listening to. A couple of big phrases there. Inter-saccadic percepts, temporal light artifact, and temporal modulation. All I can say is get out your fidget spinners. Remember, this is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org, nailed.org. You should join us. Take some educational courses. Listen to this podcast. Come on, man. Get a grip. Visit nailed.org. This podcast is sponsored by the distribution team. If you have listened to this podcast from the beginning, you may remember episode 1 with Jason Bader. Well, Jason is the owner of the distribution team, and he is hosting an inventory management seminar for distributors, November 2nd to 3rd at the Four Points Sheraton in Chicago. Remember, inventory is your largest cash asset, so go take some courses with Jason and learn how to manage it properly, or get your people to take some courses. Since 1991, the distribution team has been helping organizations discover and break down barriers to profit. This isn't just a purchasing seminar. They cover topics such as the warehouse, sales, finance, logistics. If you're looking for a good return on a training investment, this seminar is for you. He personally guarantees that each distributor will walk away with at least 30 profit-generating ideas they can take back to the shop and implement. Visit distributionteam.com/seminar registration. That's distributionteam.com/seminar registration. We'll also list it on the website, and you guys can check it out there. So without further ado, get your fidget spinners out. Dr. Arnold J. Wilkins on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Dr. Wilkins, you have had I read a little bit of your biography. It seems that you've had a significant amount of time studying visual stress. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is. I'm still not altogether sure what visual stress is, but yes, I started, in fact, because I was working in Montreal, actually, at the neuro there, and I was asked to see a patient who unfortunately had seizures every time she looked at striped lines, and it was one of those things that changes your life. I investigated which patterns she was sensitive to and which not. And that led to a lifetime interest in the visual stimuli that cause people problems. And it turns out to be not just seizures, but headaches and sometimes anxiety, different types of sensitivity manifesting in different ways. But they have in common the fact that they're stimulating the early parts of the visual system quite strongly, and we've now reached a level of technology where we can build models of the visual system, computer models, and we can measure the way in which the visual system acts in response to light and patterns, measure the change in the blood oxygenation, and these techniques have come together really. And so the story has become quite parsimonious. Basically, there are some visual stimuli that excite the visual system very strongly. And these, unfortunately, are quite prevalent in the world around us.
So I've watched your YouTube videos. I watched an interview with Visual Stress Canada, and I watched another TED Talk you gave. And so I can see that your interest in visual stress is multifaceted. And I think where the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast wants to go is your experience with artificial lighting systems and visual stress.
Fair enough. That centers around the temporal characteristics of visual stimuli. And early on, I was able to show that flicker that is so fast you can't see it interferes with the way in which you control your eyes when you're reading. And that's now recognized. What I did was to compare fluorescent lighting that flickered in the usual way, or well, it was then the usual way, with a new type of fluorescent lighting that flickered really, really quickly, so fast that it didn't affect the brain. And I could easily see differences between these two types of fluorescent lighting as regards their effects on the way in which the eyes moved. But of course, you wouldn't know which was which to look at them.
Well, I'll tell you this. Dr. Wilkins, there's two guys on the phone that actually could tell the difference between those types of fluorescent lighting systems, because Greg and I have spent a career removing old fluorescent lighting systems and upgrading them to either new fluorescent lighting systems or to LED technology. Greg, can you tell a T12 when you look at it right away?
Yes.
Even if it's behind a filtered cover?
Not always, but I would say probably 70% of the time.
Yeah, so I have a pretty good eye for different types of fluorescent technology. But so what did you do when you were studying fluorescent technology? What was the outcome? What were the possible health effects of that?
Well, that study of eye movements led to several other studies and finally culminated in a double-masked crossover study of the incidence of headaches in office workers. This was done quite a while ago now, but it's one of the few studies in the area where we had office workers in a tall building in central London, where the offices looked over it was called a light well, but actually it was better named a dark well, where a little bit of daylight penetrated, but not much. And by the time you got to the bottom of the building, there was very little daylight. So most of the lighting in offices was artificial. And we simply swapped over the circuitry controlling the lamps without people knowing which type of lighting they were under. And you may be able to tell, and I think I can tell now, but these people couldn't tell. And we just monitored the incidence of headaches of whatever kind, however attributed, over 2 months, I think it was. And the short answer is that the average headache incidence was halved with the lighting that didn't flicker at 100 per second, the new type of lighting that flickered at 32,000 flashes a second, which is too fast.
Right, so it's kind of the difference between magnetic T12 and electronic T8, wouldn't you say, Greg?
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Wilkins, what is the proper term to use in discussing the issue at hand here in terms of lighting? Is it flicker? Is it strobe? Is it flash? Is it oscillation? What would you call it?
Ah, goodness. There is the trouble is the word most people would talk of it as flicker, but a flicker is something you can see, and this is flicker that's too fast to see. I've used a number of terms, and none of them is very satisfactory. If you talk about invisible flicker, people don't know what you mean. But I suppose it's temporal modulation, if we want a technical term.
Temporal modulation, Greg. How do you like that?
That's intense.
Hey, so what I wanted to ask you...
It's a bit intense, isn't it?
Dr. Wilkins, what I wanted to ask you, though, was did you determine that was causational or correlated?
Good question. Well, there were several ways in which we could tell it was causal. We crossed over the light, so the same individuals later had the other type of lighting and their headache incidence crossed over. We had a concurrent group where there was no change in their lighting and there was no change in their headaches. And we also measured how long they left the lights turned on. And the group who were under the flickering lighting turned their lights off more.
Wow.
So even though they were under the lights for less time overall, there was an effect on the headaches nonetheless. So I think all of those combined to make it fairly watertight case. It was only a few people that were affected. The distribution of headaches was, you know, a few people had a lot of headaches, and a lot of people had no headaches at all. So it was a negative exponential distribution. So when you talk about the headaches halving, that's an average, and it's not representative of the majority, but of a significant minority of sufferers.
I read your recent article in, I think it's connections.com or some online article that was maybe republished or that you wrote where...
Yeah, I have to be careful with the republishing. the original was in Conversation.
Sorry, you're right. That's where I saw it. And you indicated that kind of we've corrected that problem in the lighting business. And now with solid state LED lighting, we're recreating that problem. Is that true?
Well, that's my estimate of the situation. I mean, there are a lot of people in the lighting industry who would disagree with it, but put it this way, the amount by which the light varies in time with LED lighting can be greater than it was with fluorescent lighting, because when a fluorescent light flickers, it doesn't go on and off, it goes bright and dim, and that's because the phosphors in the lamp hold the light for a little while with each cycle of the electricity supply. Whereas LEDs are fast devices, and generally speaking, they go on and off. So everything really is determined by the, not by the LED, but the electronic circuitry that controls it. And that varies enormously from one manufacturer to another. And at the moment, the public have no way of knowing whether the product they're buying flickers or doesn't flicker.
Are you positing the notion that solid-state LED lighting systems may actually pose a credible health risk to some people?
Some of them, undoubtedly, yes. Others, not at all. In fact, the potential of LED lighting is superb. We have an opportunity at last of providing reasonably cheaply light with a broad spectral output that we can control better than we have been able to previously, that costs less to run. I mean, it's wonderful. It's not the LED, it's the circuitry that drives it that's critical. And unfortunately, there are components in that circuitry that cost rather more when the circuitry is designed so that the LED doesn't flicker.
Dr. Wilkins, I'm going to ask Greg a question here because I don't know the answer to it. And it's a technical question, and so you may or may not know the answer to it. But Greg, tell me if I'm asking the right question here, Greg. Do you think this is a constant current or a constant voltage driver question, Greg?
You know, I was researching some on it, and it's something I don't know the answer to. But it to me, and in the article, Dr. Wilkins stated that you can solve it by having constant current to the source. So, yeah, if you have a good driver that provides constant current to the LED, then that should solve any flickering issue, is what I understand it as.
Well, I kept quiet on that issue in my original article because it's beyond my competence.
It's funny because Dr. Wilkins, I've spent, you know, almost 20 years selling light bulbs to people. And when lighting devices claim some kind of health benefit, I always felt like it was smoke and mirrors. You know, Greg, I don't know if you had a lot of the full spectrum lighting going on in Minnesota, where people wanted to have full spectrum lighting, where this thing kind of cured seasonal affective disorder.
Right. The supreme irony there is that the full spectrum lamps generally have very short persistence phosphors. So the amount or depth of modulation of the flicker, the extent of the flicker was far greater for those lamps than the more conventional halophosphate lamps or triphosphor lamps.
So it actually made things worse?
Well, it would make would make the flicker worse. It depends, you see, it depends how they were driven again, because it depends on the electronic circuitry underlying the fluorescent lamp.
Greg, again. You know, there's so much sizzle without steak when it comes to the health benefits of different kinds of lighting. Mm-hmm. If Greg, if this is true that the current, constant current drivers are the answer, and you and I don't know the answer if that's true or not, but we're going to try to get to the bottom of it. But if the answer is to make sure your bulb has a constant current driver, how would manufacturers possibly get this message out to people?
Good question. You know, I think it's something that as health benefits of lighting become more and more popular, which they are, you know, we start hearing about the circadian rhythm and how that affects everyday life for people. It's getting to be more and more of a topic. And I think, you know, we're just at the surface of this. If this is a significant problem, which I don't think it's been proven yet, it's been talked about here. But if it is, then I think that'll be the next thing that a lot of manufacturers will look at, how they can do that. And I know part of the issue with having a constant current driver is the size of it, and fitting it into your everyday light bulb is going to be difficult. But in a system or a fixture or something like that, I think it's a lot more of a possibility.
There's a discussion of this in IEEE 1789, if you're interested in the technical arguments. And this also has a good summary of the literature to date on the health effects. So that might be a good resource to start with. And if you want more expertise on the driving circuits than I can provide, then your best source is Dr. Brad Lehman from New Northeastern in Boston.
The Get a Grip on Lighting podcast is going to look up Dr. Brad Lehman real quick after this.
Oh, good, good.
I think what I heard you say there, Greg, was that you're saying that the constant voltage kind of driver is more likely to be in the type of lamp that's in someone's house.
Yeah, that is a question I don't know. I've been researching, and I'm going to reach out to a few to ask, so I do not know that. I think it's just a matter of, you know, how they can regulate the current is what is difficult to do in all lighting. And in looking at it, and again, Dr. Wilkins might not know as much about this on the lighting side, but I've seen a few products come out now that are advertised, like an MR16 that's advertised as constant current. But the reason it is out there is for dimming purposes. It doesn't talk about less flickering. It just says it dims better.
Hmm. And the dimming would have something to do with the flickering too.
It certainly does. And the trouble is we've got a lot of retrofit of existing dimmers. And that's a huge problem because a lot of these are just not built for LEDs at all. So they need to be, the dimmers need to be redesigned as well.
Oh, hang on. Whoa. Let me ask you something, Dr. Wilkins. If you take an LED bulb and dim it, you may exacerbate this problem?
Absolutely, yeah.
Even if it's not visibly noticeable to you?
It usually will be, because when you dim it, the device very often becomes unstable.
Right, but a lot of times you dim them, they're unstable for a little bit, and then they stabilize at some point.
Mm.
In the dimming, Greg, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I would say you notice it as you dim it, and then it gets to a point where it kind of can steady out. But again, how much of this is actually noticeable? And that's kind of some of the questions I want to ask about is, first of all, is there anything to do with hertz? Does that have anything to do with the light bulb product saying how many hertz it is, how much flickering it will have?
Absolutely. There are two things. Your sensitivity to flicker depends on how bright the thing is. So as you dim it, you're going to be less sensitive to flicker anyway, as from the visual point of view, although the flicker will then get worse, but generally. But if you want it in terms of hertz, you in the IEEE standard, you can flicker anything as much as you want above 3 kilohertz. But as soon as you get less than 3 kilohertz, you can start, believe it or not, to see the flicker under certain circumstances. For example, I was at a conference recently in Toronto, actually, at the National Research Council, and it was organized by Jennifer Veach, and she had a large conference room which was lit by LED lighting, which flickered at 400 hertz or thereabouts. And half, roughly half of the people there could see the flicker, not as flicker, but every time they move their eyes, and when you move your eyes, you know, changing fixation from one point of regard to another, you move your eyes incredibly quickly. And if you moved your eyes across the ceiling, you could see a succession of bright luminaires. And that's quite distracting. So you can see those kind of temporal light artifacts at frequencies up to about 3 kilohertz. That's very fast. And we didn't appreciate that until LEDs came along, because they go on and off, and it's much easier to see these, I call them intracircadic percepts, and it's rather techie, but when your eye is in flight from one point of regard to another, it can move at 700 degrees a second, up to about 700 degrees a second. The motion is incredibly fast. So the image on your retina is moving very quickly. And we know under certain circumstances you can see that. Because in nature, of course, when you move your eyes, you're making a saccade or whatever, an eye jerk from one point of regard to another, you're moving across a completely stably illuminated world. And that means that the retinal image is sort of smeared, if you like. But if there's flicker, then the retinal image is lit intermittently in different positions on the retina, forming a pattern. And it's that pattern that you can see under certain circumstances.
And what are the possible negative health outcomes of someone being exposed to more of that?
We don't know, unfortunately. But we've known for a while that frequencies up to about 200 hertz may have negative health effects. So, for example, we know from my early study that flicker at 100 hertz with about a 30% variation in light level is enough to give you headaches. We know from work of Jennifer Veach that similar modulation from fluorescent lamps can interfere with visual performance, with the performance of certain visual tasks. And we've known that flicker at those frequencies can interfere with the control of eye movements, as I said earlier. But Sam Berman showed that if you measure the retroretinogram, the electrical activity from the retina, you can see electrical effects up to about 200 hertz. But this was all done before the importance of the perception during the saccade was appreciated. And now that we realize that you can see whilst the eye is in flight from one position to another, and that the eye moves so rapidly, and that you can actually physically discriminate, reliably discriminate a stable light from one that appears stable but is actually flickering.
Some LED lights may create a flicker that interferes with your eye's ability to scan across a landscape or something like that, and this may cause you to have ill health effects?
I don't know about the ill health effects. Those haven't been demonstrated. What I have demonstrated is that if you've got a light and you make you change your point of regard from one position to another across the light, you can discriminate when that light is flickering at 2 kilohertz from when that light is steady. Because under one circumstance, you see a series of images of the light in different positions, and in the other, you just see a smear.
Kind of relating it to lighting, I'm looking at a few products here, a compact fluorescent On the bulb itself, it says 60 hertz. On an LED bulb itself, it says 60 hertz. On an LED driver, the frequency says 50 to 60 hertz. Is that telling me that it's 50 to 60 times a second?
Not necessarily. That's telling you what the AC frequency you can use it on. I don't think it's telling you anything about necessarily the frequency it's coming out at. You see, if it typically in those circuits, the light will be produced with each half cycle of the electricity supply. So if the electricity supply is at 60 hertz with a fluorescent lamp, for example, you'll get a flash when the current goes in one direction, another flash when it goes in the opposite direction. So you'll get two flashes with each cycle of the electricity supply. So that'll be 120 hertz. There'll be some unevenness, probably, in the light output, or some slight mismatch between the two half cycles. So you may get a little bit of modulation at the frequency of the supply as well. But the bulk of it will be at twice the frequency of supply. But with LEDs, it's a totally different thing. It depends entirely on the way in which the driver has been designed. Now, some drivers, a few, simply rectify the electricity supply and put that straight into the LED. And then you'll get 120 hertz in Canada.
The hertz that we need on the box is not the incoming or acceptable hertz, but really the outgoing.
Exactly. When we don't have that, all we need really is information for the public that says whether the light conforms to IEEE 1789. They won't know what that means, of course, but if there was an accepted standard, unfortunately IEEE 1789 is thought by the lighting industry to be too conservative. So although it's gradually being adopted and has been in California, the adoption, as I understand it, the adoption isn't universal. But I think it's gradually becoming accepted. There are problems with it. I mean, basically, the problems stem from the fact that we really don't know enough about the health hazards. But the fact that you can actually see the light, or some people can see the light, not all people, can see the light at 2 kilohertz during an eye movement under certain circumstances, indicates that there's a potential for health problems, but we don't know anything beyond that, really. It's very unsatisfactory.
And this is the type of thing that you would investigate at the University of Essex?
Well, we have been looking at it, yes. I mean, I've got a little paper that I'm presenting at the next CIE, International Lighting Commission meeting, just going through all the various conditions that can influence whether you're likely to see this artifact during a rapid eye movement or not. And there are a lot of things that will influence the probability of you seeing it. There are individual differences in susceptibility as well, which makes it even more of a nightmare. So I think there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done. We need to find out what the important parameters are, constrain those, and then measure the potential health effects. But there's a huge program of work that needs to be done, really. Unless, of course, one just says, well, we'll make lights that where you simply can't see this temporal light part of it. And if you can't see it, then the chances are it's not got any health hazard. But I agree that health hazard is the major dependent variable, and we simply don't have the data on that. We only have the data on that from fluorescent lighting.
Right. Have you seen there's a new article out that came out August 30th that said light flicker could prevent Alzheimer's, and it's an MIT study that the prospect that artificial light could be tuned to play a preventative role in degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. Have you read into that yet?
I haven't read that one. I've read articles that say that flicker can actually improve your vision. I think that's in the short term. And I think the circumstances under which that would occur mightn't apply to general lighting. Generally speaking, I take the view that flicker is bad for you, I'm afraid to say, having seen its effects in photosensitive epilepsy. Generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, it is that the further you deviate from the characteristics of the world that you evolved.
Yeah, so you're saying the sun doesn't flicker.
The sun doesn't flicker by and large. There are a few, and you very rarely are exposed to synchronous diffuse flicker across the whole visual field. And if you are, and that flicker is at around 20 hertz, there's a good chance of having a seizure. So we're not built to cope with it.
A good chance for who to have a seizure? An epileptic or a regular person?
Well, a substantial proportion of the population, actually. It's possible for anyone to have a seizure under the right circumstances, not just as a minority of the population. And those that don't have a seizure will feel very ill and nauseated under certain circumstances.
So you're saying that flicker will negatively affect everybody's health to the point where some people might have seizures?
I have to be careful what I say. There's a substantial proportion of the population who are potentially adversely affected by flicker, particularly flicker at around 20 hertz. They will feel nauseated and they'll feel the need to get away from it. It's highly aversive.
And you've proven this with fluorescent lights. Like, this is not a question. You have,
no, it's not.
You've proven this, that with some fluorescent lights, you can, there is proven health effects.
Yes. Huh. I would say so. Yeah.
Whew. That's crazy. And
well, I mean, we've known that for a while.
So what needs to be on the boxes of these lights is the hertz that they operate at and the hertz that they operate at when they're dimmed with the correct dimmer.
Yes.
It's getting very complicated, Greg, to be a lighting distributor, buddy.
More and more every day.
It is, yeah.
Like all you, Dr. Wilkins, all you guys at the top of the hill that, you know, talk about this kind of stuff, we're the people in the trenches selling light bulbs to people.
It's tough.
And I'll tell you, they don't want to hear about this. They just want the lowest price. Wouldn't you say, Greg?
Yeah, it's going to be another tough one to talk about.
That's the problem. That's the problem. You have to convince people to pay a little extra and get something that's healthy. And that is a tough one, really. Unless there's legislation involved, and there isn't at the moment.
Is it worth it to get to legislate this, Dr. Wilkins?
I would say so. I mean, at the moment, we have a situation where a substantial minority of the population is unable to go into certain shops without feeling nauseated. That's the situation we have at present. They attribute that nausea to the lighting, and personally, I think they're right to do so. That's the situation as it stands. And so people who manufacture lights for the general population need to manufacture them for that minority, because they're a substantial minority, and the light has to cope with everybody, really. I'll give you an example. The potential benefits from LED lighting are enormous, and it's very potentially, with the right drivers, it's a beautiful type of lighting. But we're talking the drivers, and the type of driver varies so much at the moment. People have done studies just looking at the market, and it goes from lamps that flicker 100%. To lamps that don't flicker at all. That's the range.
Yeah, Greg, you know, I totally believe that.
And the public has no knowledge of that.
Greg, I totally... We don't have any knowledge of this, Dr. Wilkins. Do you, Greg?
No.
I mean, you're talking about... We sell light bulbs every day. We're the host and co-host of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dr. Wilkins.
Well, there's a study in Sweden where they actually just went to the store and purchased a whole slew of different lamps and then measured them. And the range was as I described it. You could go from stuff that flickered to stuff that was completely flicker-free.
Was that
completely flicker-free DC lighting? And they were all sort of the same sort of price. Huh. So, If you talk to Brad, you'll find that it's quite possible to produce drivers with the right design for a relatively modest increase in price.
But don't you know it's a race to the bottom in this business, Dr. Wilkins?
That's the trouble. That's the trouble.
Huh. Wow. Craig, I just had my mind blown. Okay. Well, I think I really don't know what to say at this point, in that I'm going to say this, that I have no idea which lamps in my warehouse are like this and which ones aren't. How about you, Craig?
I'm in the same boat, and I think every other lighting company is too.
Okay, well, here's a little tip. A lot of children these days are using a fidget spinner. Do you know where they come across these things?
Yes.
Yes.
And if you spin it and look at it underneath the lamp, if it spins in the same direction, then the chances are the lamp isn't flickering. If it starts to spin in the opposite direction, then be damn sure the lamp is flickering. There's a much better little top you can buy from Sylvania. You just spin the top and you can see any modulation. Some cell phones, the camera on them is sensitive to the flicker. They've improved the cameras now, so that generally speaking, the flicker's not there. There are some apps that will enable you to measure the flicker. They're rather difficult to use. They're not terribly reliable than the one I've got anyway. So there are cheap and cheerful ways of getting the flicker content, but ideally you just want to measure it with a high frequency response photodiode and appropriate circuitry. Or you can buy, one thing I've got is that it's a laser chopper. Now they're rather expensive, but the device I've got is portable, and it chops the light at any frequency you choose, up to 3 kilohertz. So basically what you then see is the beat between the frequency of the lamp and the frequency of the chopper. And so you can find exactly what frequency the lamp's operating at. And also you can literally see the phase relationships between lamps that are on different phases and so on. And it's quite a good way of looking at office lighting from the point of view of flicker.
Do I have it right, Dr. Wilkins? Is it IEEE 1789 standard?
That's correct.
Interesting. Well, that was a big one. Dr. Wilkins, thank you for coming on.
I've enjoyed it.
So have we. How about you, Greg? Anything left for Dr. Wilkins?
I don't think so. No, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Wilkins. Bye for now.
Right on. Thank you.
Come on, man. Learn how to manage that inventory better. Check out Jason Bader's Inventory Management for Distributors seminar, November 2nd and 3rd at the Four Points Sheraton in Chicago. Remember, man, got a lot of money tied up in that inventory. The more of it if you move it better or you manage it better, you're going to put more cash in your pocket. And isn't that what it's all about? Cash. Visit distributionteam.com/seminar registration. Again, I'll post it on the website to sign up for this seminar. I think you should do it, man. Don't wait. Go to distributionteam.com/seminar registration. You know why? Because before October 13th, you can get an early registration discount. I have taken some of Jason's seminars, and they're good, man. It's been a while, but if you haven't taken any of Jason's seminars, I think you should go check it out. Or send your warehouse manager to check it out. Distributionteam.com. We are the official podcast of who? The National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org. Nailed.org. Join us, man. Join Nailed. Nailed.org. Bye.